KZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic Media
ABC
app.
News, I'm Faith Abubing. After 146 days, there's a tentative deal between representatives for the Writers Guild of America and Hollywood Studios.
We saw marathon negotiations over the weekend, and now the two sides reaching this tentative deal. It's a three-year contract that still has to be approved by the Guild, but the picketing is suspended immediately.
ABC's Kenneth Whitworth in Los Angeles. Details of the agreement still have not been made public. President Biden and former President Trump will both visit striking auto workers in Michigan as members of the UAW walk the picket lines for better contracts with Ford, GM, and Stellantis. New Jersey Democrat Senator Bob Menendez will answer questions from reporters today for the first time since his indictment last week on corruption charges. He'll host a news conference in his home state this morning. His arraignment is set for Wednesday. Beginning today, families who lost everything in the Maui fires will be allowed back to see the burned remains of their homes in Lahaina. This is ABC News. The latest side effect of the ongoing drought in the South is something called a saltwater wedge, and it's the reason New Orleans has declared a state of emergency.
In the same way that low water pressure and supply lines can lead to contaminated water in your home, the reduced flow of the Mississippi River is allowing salt water to flow in from the Gulf of Mexico. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards.
I don't want to minimize the challenge, and I don't want to exaggerate it either.
The plan is to bring in 36 million gallons of fresh water a day to dilute the salt water in Louisiana treatment plants. The water will arrive by barges on the Mississippi River. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
Whoa. Ukrainian officials say at least one person was injured in Russian drone and missile strikes on the Black Sea port of Odessa. Russia's defense ministry said it downed several Ukrainian drones over Russian territory. Faith Abube, ABC News.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. A 17-year-old girl was killed in a car crash with a semi-truck in western Wisconsin on Saturday morning. According to the Wisconsin State Patrol, the 17-year-old from Fairchild, Wisconsin, was driving on Highway 29 near Elk Mound when she struck a semi-truck going the opposite direction. The semi-truck then went through the median and drove into a ditch. The driver of the semi-truck was taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. According to a WPR report, Wisconsin will soon be home to a first-of-its-kind energy storage system that could become the template for wide-scale use across the country. A 200-megawatt-hour storage system is planned by Alliant Energy in Columbia County, using $30 million of federal grant money. Alliant Energy claims the, quote, highly efficient, zero-emission battery system can power as many as 20,000 homes by compressing carbon dioxide from a gas into a liquid, then back into a gas when energy is needed. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
If I could be you.
And you could be me. For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow,
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories.
Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Everybody can sing along to. It's the Temptations doing My Girl. That song, by the way, they started recording it on this date, September 25th in 1964 at Hitsville, USA, Studio A, of course, in Detroit. It was the first single by the Temptations to feature David Ruffin on lead vocals. And that song, co-written by Smokey Robinson and Ronald White, went on to become the first U.S. number one song by the Temptations, the first of 15 top 10 hits by that group. It gave us a lot of great music, that's for sure. Hey, we've got 9 minutes after 9 o'clock right now and 64 degrees with sunshine in La Crosse. And in Hayward right now, 60 degrees with mostly cloudy skies. Richland Center, 61 with sunshine. Hey, speaking of the weather, you know, this winter is going to be an El Nino winter. So what does that mean to us? Well, here's a story from CNN. It says an El Nino winter is coming. Here's what that could mean for the United States. And this piece was just posted this morning at CNN.com. And it says, fall has only just begun, but it's not too soon to look ahead to winter, especially since this one may look drastically different than recent years because of El Nino. This winter will be the first in a few years to feel the effects of the phenomenon, which has a sizable impact on the weather during the coldest months of the year. El Nino is one of three phases of the El Nino Southern Oscillation, which tracks water temperature changes in the equatorial Pacific Ocean that can have rippling effects on weather patterns around the globe. The El Nino phase occurs when these ocean temperatures are warmer than normal for an extended period. This year's El Nino began in June, and it's expected to be strong this winter and last at least into early spring, according to NOAA's Climate Prediction Center. El Nino's cooler counterpart, La Nina, played a huge role in the past three winters across the U.S., keeping the South dry, while parts of the West received a lot of much-needed snow. Early winter predictions from the Climate Prediction Center have many of the hallmarks of typical El Nino winters, auguring changes to come. So what could this winter look like? Well, no two El Nino winters are the same, but many have temperature and precipitation trends in common. One of the major reasons is the position of the jet stream, which often shifts south during an El Nino winter. This shift typically brings wetter and cooler weather to the south, while the north becomes drier and warmer, according to NOAA. Because the jet stream is essentially a river of air that storms flow through, they can move across the south with increased frequency during an El Nino winter. More storms means more precipitation, typically from the southern plains to the southeast. This could be crucial for states like Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, which have been plagued by drought. And the combination of cooler weather and more frequent precipitation may also increase the chances for wintry precipitation, like freezing rain and sleet and snow, to fall in the south. El Nino typically leads to a milder winter in the north, from the Pacific Northwest to the Rockies, Plains, and Midwest. Individual storms can still form and deliver bouts of brutal cold or heavy snow to these regions, but they are typically less frequent. This could be bad news for portions of the Midwest also dealing with extreme and exceptional levels of drought, and for snowpack in the Pacific Northwest, which is a key water source for the region. El Nino winter patterns are less regular in California, the Southwest, and the Northeast. The frequency of storms and uptick in precipitation across California and portions of the Southwest may depend on the overall strength of the El Nino. A stronger El Nino may lead to more storms, low elevation rain, and high elevation snow, while a weaker version could hang the Southwest out to dry. The Northeast doesn't have a well-defined set of expectations during an El Nino winter. The region can be milder overall, like its other northern counterparts, but it can also be at the mercy of robust coastal storms moving along the Atlantic coast. So looking back at recent El Nino winters can also help visualize what the upcoming winter may have in store. A weak El Nino during the 2018-2019 season had several notable storms, including one in December that brought snow and ice from Texas to the Carolinas. The season was also the wettest winter on record for the U.S. mainland and featured above average temperatures across much of the East, according to NOAA. Also, a very strong El Nino during the 2015-2016 winter contributed to the warmest winter on record for the U.S. mainland. According to NOAA, the warm winter didn't prevent massive snowstorms, including a deadly blizzard that brought East Coast travel to a standstill. And going back a little further, the 2009-2010 winter was the last winter with an El Nino of the same forecast strength as this year. It was quite cold across the southern and central U.S. and very wet and snowy along the east coast, according to data from NOAA. The season was notorious for multiple blizzards slamming the northeast in rapid succession. So what does that mean for us in Wisconsin? Well, it could be a more mild winter than we've experienced in the past few years. I think I kind of remember that winter of 2015-2016 when we had a little bit of snow at the beginning of the season, and then that was pretty much it, at least where I was that year in Milwaukee. So we'll have to see what it brings, but there's a little bit of an idea of what could happen. Up next, the next story I'm going to get to is about alcohol in Wisconsin. What type of alcohol do you drink? Well, it depends on where you are in the United States as to what may be the most popular alcohol in your area. And I have some data on that we'll get to after we take a break. It'll be a short one, so stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org, brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Here's your updated forecast. High of 65 this afternoon under cloudy skies with scattered thunderstorms likely. Southeast winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast tonight, scattered thunderstorms likely. Lows level off around 55. Chance for scattered storms tomorrow. Highs around 67, cloudy. Upper 60s Wednesday and Thursday with a chance for scattered rain showers Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air WLAK 1260 AM. Right now 58.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels on Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo.
Better than I know myself, so I'm gonna let her do all the talking.
Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo.
I came across a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree.
Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo.
I felt a little fear upon my back. I said, don't look back, just keep on walking.
Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo.
When the big black horse said, look this way, he said, hey, but I said no, 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 no. I said no, no, you're not the one for me. No, 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 no. I said no, no, you're not the one for me.
Ooh-hoo.
And my heart hit a problem in the early hours, so I stopped it dead for a beat or two.
Ooh-hoo.
But I cut some cord and I shouldn't have done it, and it won't forgive me after all these years.
Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo.
So I sent it to a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree.
Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo.
Now I won't come back cause it's all so happy, and now I got a hole for the world to see.
Ooh-hoo.
Yeah.
Ooh-hoo.
And it said no. You're not the one for me. No, 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 no. Say no, no, you're not the one for me.
Ooh-hoo.
Oh, no, 9:23 right now. Welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show. We've got 63 degrees in Eau Claire right now under cloudy skies. In Amory, 59 degrees with rain. And as I mentioned before the break, the next topic that I want to get to is alcohol. And I'm going to ask my producer, Sam. Hey, Sam, do you drink alcohol when you go out, or do you drink alcohol, period?
I do. Not a ton.
Beer occasionally or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Is beer your alcohol of choice usually?
Usually,
or do you
drink
other stuff too?
I do drink other stuff, but usually beer.
Usually beer. All right. Well, I have some interesting data here that says Wisconsin is not what you would expect when it comes to ordering alcohol. This story is from Nexstar, which is a company that owns TV stations, and I believe this originated from WFRV, which is Channel 5, Green Bay, Appleton. It says here, during the warmer months, you may have found yourself out to eat. Maybe you even sat on the patio enjoying the warm moments before they faded into the chill of winter. There's also a pretty good chance you had a cold drink in hand, according to a new report. Toast, which is a restaurant point of sale and management system, recently reviewed customer trends across its roughly 93,000 United States restaurants, including people's alcohol purchasing behaviors. Overall, Toast found that if a customer was ordering alcohol, it was most likely going to be beer, which ranked as the most popular adult beverage being ordered in all 50 states during the second quarter of 2023. While you may guess a state like Wisconsin, which is home to the most self-reported excessive drinkers and has a history in the beer industry, would be ordering beer the most, but it was actually our neighbors to the west. Minnesota restaurant goers drank roughly 53% more beer per business than restaurant goers in any other state, according to Toast. Kansas and Pennsylvania ranked second and third, though both came in well below the 53% benchmark at 41% and 39% respectively. Kansas was also responsible for another notable upset. Kentucky, with its rich whiskey history, ranked only as third for the most whiskey consumed per restaurant location, Toast found. It was Kansas, where whiskey ranked more popular, followed by Ohio. Now, let me ask you this. Would you have guessed that Kansas was the state where whiskey was the most popular in the U.S.? I don't think I would have guessed Kansas. I wouldn't have even thought of Kansas as a big whiskey drinking state. But that shows you why it's important to look at stories like this. It says those eating out in Ohio appeared to favor hard seltzers. Toast data shows that on average, Ohio sold 160% more hard seltzers per restaurant than any other state. That's like 2.5 times as much, right? These alcoholic beverages often gain popularity in the warm months, except maybe in Wyoming, which served on average 66% fewer hard seltzers than average in the second quarter of 2023. Vodka was the most popular spirit in nearly every state, according to Toast's analysis, except in Arizona, California, Colorado, Georgia, Hawaii, Louisiana, New Mexico, Texas, and Utah. Let me ask you this, which drink or which alcohol do you think was more popular in those states? If it wasn't vodka, which is the most popular spirit in nearly every state, which spirit was the most popular in those states? Arizona, California, Colorado, Georgia, Hawaii, Louisiana, New Mexico, Texas, and Utah? If you guessed tequila, you're right. Restaurant goers in Texas consumed the most tequila. In fact, they consumed 119% more tequila than diners in any other state. Other southern states like Georgia, Arizona, and Florida also consumed high amounts of tequila. So there's a little bit of information about what people are drinking around the country. Got to take a break. Stick around. You're tuned into your local Civic Media radio station.
I go to the bar. I rent my coat. I call a bartender. So look, man, come down here. You got down there, so what you want?
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. At 10, As Goes Wisconsin. Then at noon, Civic Media Network News. On Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Faith Abubing. After 146 days, there's a tentative deal between representatives for the Writers Guild of America and Hollywood Studios.
We saw marathon negotiations over the weekend, and now the two sides reaching this tentative deal. It's a 3-year contract that still has to be approved by the Guild, but the picketing is suspended immediately.
ABC's Kenneth Whitworth in Los Angeles. Details of the agreement still have not been made public. President Biden and former President Trump will both visit striking auto workers in Michigan as members of the UAW walk the picket lines for better contracts with Ford, GM, and Stellantis. New Jersey Democrat Senator Bob Menendez will answer questions from reporters today for the first time since his indictment last week on corruption charges. He'll host a news conference in his home state this morning. His arraignment is set for Wednesday. Beginning today, families who lost everything in the Maui fires will be allowed back to see the burned remains of their homes in Lahaina. This is ABC News.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Law enforcement authorities are warning the public to be on the lookout for a man accused of fleeing a physical domestic disturbance on Saturday. The Eau Claire County Sheriff's Office alleges 28-year-old Mitchell Henke threatened a female victim and her child and physically assaulted her at the 3200 block of West Cameron Street in the township of Union. Authorities say the suspect is wanted for several felony charges and is considered armed and dangerous and should not be approached. The United Auto Workers strike is expanding into Wisconsin and Minnesota. According to a WCCO report, UAW President Sean Fain has called to expand the union strike to a General Motors facility in Hudson, Wisconsin, and a Stellantis distribution center in Plymouth, Minnesota. The union is currently demanding a nearly 40% pay increase, pension benefits for all employees, a four-day 32-hour work week, and more paid vacation time. UAW workers are also striking at a Stellantis distribution center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Here's to trekking through a kaleidoscope of fall color in Wisconsin. To being like, who's up for whitewater rafting? And turning stories into souvenirs. Here's to rich traditions made new again with good company. And seasonal flavors that taste even better when shared with friends. Here's to those who Wisconsin. Plan your fall getaway at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station, The Maggie Dawn Show.
My immediate thought when I read about this and then watched it today was, please don't die, Senator McConnell. I couldn't disagree more strongly with Senator McConnell's policy positions, but he has been one of the only elected officials that's in a leadership position for the Republican Party that hasn't completely supplicated himself to Donald Trump.
The Maggie Dawn Show,
weeknights at 6 p.m.
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
I've always been the one to say the first goodbye. Had to love and lose 100 million times. Had to get it wrong to know just what I like. Now I'm falling. You say my name like I have never heard before. I'm indecisive, but this time I know for sure. I hope I'm not the only one that feels it all. I would've known it, baby.
Daniel's show, 9:35 right now. We've got 64 degrees with mostly cloudy skies in La Crosse and 61 degrees with sunshine in Richland Center right now. And the next thing I want to discuss here is Cassidy Hutchinson. Remember her from the January 6th hearings last summer? Well, she's back with a new book. She's coming out with a book to give us more information about what was actually going on in the White House in the waning days of the previous administration. She says here, according to a headline at the Insider, that Mark Meadows burned so many documents before leaving the White House that his wife complained about dry cleaning bills to remove the bonfire smell. Hutchinson, in her new book and during a New York Times interview, described a White House steeped in paranoia. And she said that Meadows feared deep state interception when it came to document disposal. Evidently, that's why he was burning files in his fireplace, which ran up his dry cleaning costs. Former Trump White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson, in her new memoir, said that one time Chief of Staff Mark Meadows burned so many documents in the waning days of the administration that his wife complained to her about the dry cleaning bills to remove the burning smell from his clothes, according to the New York Times. Hutchinson, who last year vaulted into the national spotlight after testifying before the House January 6th committee and remarking on the inner workings of the White House during the Capitol riot, described to the Times an administration that was steeped in paranoia. The former Republican aide told the Times that Meadows and other staffers feared that individuals from the deep state could potentially swoop in and find the documents they were disposing of. Hutchinson, in her memoir, wrote that Meadows chose to dispose of documents in his fireplace in the waning days of the administration in January of 2021, with Meadows' wife grumbling about the mounting expenses of removing the bonfire scent from his suits. Earlier this week, Hutchinson, whose memoir, Enough, will be released Wednesday, accused former New York City mayor and ex-Trump personal attorney Rudy Giuliani of groping her on January 6th of 2021. She also accused John Eastman, another pro-Trump attorney, of watching Giuliani as the ex-mayor put his hand, quote, under my blazer, then my skirt, before offering a leering grin. Giuliani and Eastman were two of the most vocal backers of former President Donald Trump's debunked claims regarding the 2020 election. In August, Giuliani and Eastman were indicted by a Fulton County grand jury alongside Trump and 16 others over their efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential results in Georgia. Both men, through representatives, vehemently denied Hutchinson's allegations. In the memoir, Hutchinson wrote of how she felt, quote, a creeping sense of dread that something really horrible was going to happen, quote, end quote, on January 6th. And while testifying before the House committee last year, she spoke of her exasperation at what she described as Meadows' lack of urgency as the Capitol riot unfolded, which disrupted the certification of now President Joe Biden's 2020 electoral victory. Quote, I start to get frustrated because I sort of felt like I was looking at a bad car accident about to happen where you can't stop it, but you want to be able to do something, she told the panel at the time. I remember thinking in that moment, Mark needs to snap out of this, and I don't know how to snap him out of this, but he needs to care. Insider reached out to Meadows for comment. No comment so far. Cassidy Hutchinson's book coming out on Wednesday, and she's doing quite a few interviews these days. And we got, 9:40 right now? 20 minutes till 10. The next thing I want to get to is about a story that happened in Indiana over the weekend. And in case you haven't heard, there was the big Farm Aid concert that happened outside of Indianapolis at the place we used to call Deer Creek back in the day, now called the Ruoff Mortgage Center, something like that. But anyway, the Farm Aid that goes on every year, it's been going on since 1985 to help out American farmers, the small family farmers. And it's since its inception, you know, there have been the board of directors who perform just about every year, talking about Willie Nelson and John Mellencamp, Dave Matthews and Neil Young. And they've now added Margo Price to the board. So all five of them performed. Neil Young, first time since 2019, back at Farm Aid. But there was a big, big unannounced guest artist who nobody knew was going to be there. You know, the lineup was set. They had the five board members, Willie Nelson, Neil Young, John Mellencamp, Dave Matthews, and Margo Price. And then they also had a bunch of special guests, including Bob Weir and Wolf Bros, String Cheese Incident, Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, and those were all announced. But at the end of the night, when people were expecting Willie Nelson to go on stage, instead of Willie coming out, there was a surprise special guest. Who do you think it was? Have you heard? It was Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan shows up at Farm Aid unannounced. Nobody knew he was going to be there. Came out, and not only did he perform some unusual songs, one song he hasn't played in like 14 years, but he also played guitar, which he hasn't done in quite a few years. Let me give you a little bit of the story from Rolling Stone. Bob Dylan and the Heartbreakers, Tom Petty's band backing him up, played a surprise set of classics at Farm Aid. It was the highlight of an epic show that included performances by Neil Young, Dave Matthews, Bob Weir, Margo Price, and John Mellencamp. This piece was posted yesterday at Rolling Stone by Andy Green. It says here around 10:20 p.m. on Saturday night, a shadowy group of figures walked onto the Farm Aid stage at the Ruoff Music Center in Noblesville, Indiana. This was supposed to be the moment where Willie Nelson wrapped up the night, but there was no sign of the redheaded stranger or his band. Instead, another act was plugging in instruments on the darkened stage. There was no announcement of any kind, and the large screens on both sides of the stage went completely blank for the first time all day. It took about 15 seconds for the screams to start once the light hit the face of the guy in the middle. Bob Dylan, back on the Farm Aid stage for the first time since the inaugural event in 1985, which was inspired by his offhand comments at Live Aid a few months earlier about helping family farmers. Joining him were three-fifths of the Heartbreakers, guitarist Mike Campbell, keyboardist Ben Montench, and drummer Steve Ferrone, alongside members of Campbell's other group, the Dirty Knobs. Dylan was playing electric guitar. In case you haven't been keeping up with Dylan over the years, recent years, he's been mostly behind a keyboard. So this was an extraordinary moment for many reasons. Dylan almost never makes unannounced appearances or performs without his own band. He hasn't played with the Heartbreakers in 20 years. Campbell, Tench, and Ferrone have rarely performed together in public since Tom Petty passed away. And Dylan usually plays piano at his shows. There wasn't even a tiny hint anywhere throughout the day that this might happen. It became even more surreal once it became clear they were opening with Maggie's Farm, the song Maggie's Farm, which was their closer at the very first Farm Aid. Dylan hadn't played the song anywhere since 2009, but this wasn't a rearranged, never-ending tour rendition only recognizable by the lyrics. This was Dylan and the band largely recreating the sound of the original 1965 recording. And then they followed that up with Positively 4th Street, another 1965 throwback. And on this one, Mike Campbell channeled guitarist Mike Bloomfield. Tench flawlessly executed Al Kooper's organ parts, and the hardcore Dylan fans in the audience had to blink a few times to make sure they weren't dreaming. Dylan last played the song in 2013, but it's hard to remember a time it sounded anything like this. It was quite possibly sometime in early 1966 when the Hawks were backing Dylan. The mini set wrapped up with Ballad of a Thin Man. This was yet another 1965 tune played to studio perfection. Before the crowd could fully process what happened, Dylan and the band walked off. They didn't say a single word to the audience at any point. And since the screens remained off during the entire set, it's quite possible some fans on the lawn didn't even realize what had just taken place, since they could barely see any of it. So what exactly brought about this unbilled set? Is there any scenario Dylan tours with them next year and plays sets centered around his 60s catalog? That's very hard to imagine, but so was this Farm Aid set before it happened. Dylan has East Coast dates with his standard band throughout October and November, but beyond that, it's impossible to guess what will happen. The Dylan and Heartbreakers set is likely to dominate the coverage of this year's Farm Aid, but it was just one of many amazing moments. If you get a chance and you're interested, go on to the YouTube and see what you can see. I'm sure there are some postings of some of that show that took place Saturday, Farm Aid. I got to listen to most of it on Sirius XM. It was a great show all day and all night. Got to take a break. Stick around. You're tuned into the Stu Daniels Show.
Delicious Honeycrisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Brock.
I didn't realize that Tucker Carlson's like hemorrhaging viewers. And I heard yesterday someone was like, oh yeah, like no one's actually watching it anymore. I was like, oh, yeah, that doesn't really surprise me. It's kind of like Threads.
it was a thing for about 5 minutes.
A week, everyone was excited, and then they moved on.
Well, it's like Scott Walker's presidential campaign. It's a big deal for about a week.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The Green Bay Packers call Lambeau Field home, but did you know the stadium has a history all its own? It started with where to build it. Residents on both sides of the city wanted it. Officials argued there had to be room for growth. Eventually, farmland was purchased, but in Ashwaubenon. The bargaining continued, and in 1956, the land was annexed to Green Bay. Green Bay City Stadium became a reality the following year and was renamed in honor of team co-founder and coach Curly Lambeau in 1965. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
Here's your updated forecast. Scattered thunderstorms likely this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 65. Winds out of the east, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Isolated thunderstorms likely. Lows level off around 57. Chance for isolated storms again tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 67. Overcast skies. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 59.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom and Crude. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show. WLAK.
So hurt, why then don't you show it? You say you've lost your faith, but that's not where it's at. You have no faith to lose, and you know it. Say, how are you? Good luck, but you don't mean it. When you know as well as me, you'd rather see me paralyzed. Why don't you just come out once and scream it? No, I do not feel that good. Heartbreaks you embrace. If I was a master thief, perhaps I'd rob them. And though I know you're dissatisfied with your position and your place, don't you understand? It's not my problem. Just for that one moment, I could be you. Yes, I wish that for just one time, you could stand inside my shoes. You'd know what a drag it is to see you.
Yeah, that's it. That's one of the songs that Bob Dylan played on Saturday night, Farm Aid. Surprised everybody, actually shocked a lot of people. And people like me, pretty surprised by what happened at that show. And I have another perspective here. This was published at USA Today, just posted today, or I guess yesterday. But it was originally written by Dominika Bongiovanni from the Indianapolis Star. And the headline says, "Surprise, Bob Dylan shocks the Farm Aid crowd and plays three songs with Tom Petty's Heartbreakers, Dateline Noblesville, Indiana. Bob Dylan inspired Farm Aid with an off-the-cuff remark that he made at Live Aid back in 1985. And he said at Live Aid, Dylan said, wouldn't it be great if we did something for our own farmers right here in America? And that remark was what led Willie Nelson to start Farm Aid. And then this past Saturday night, a sold-out crowd of 22,000 people at Ruoff Music Center witnessed a full-circle historical moment when the Bard himself played a surprise set right before co-founder Willie Nelson's concert-ending performance. About 10 hours into the performances, nearly 20 acts played between 12:30 p.m. and midnight. The stage darkened dramatically before the lights slowly brightened again, revealing Dylan with members of the Heartbreakers. Crowd murmurs moved from shocked to thrilled. Clad in a black suit and white shoes, he performed Maggie's Farm, Positively 4th Street, the song we just heard, and Ballad of a Thin Man. Dylan, who was backed by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers when he played the first Farm Aid event, September 22nd of 1985, took and exited the stage without addressing the crowd. Another icon followed Dylan to end the concert. Willie Nelson played the longest and final set of the day, which included Always on My Mind, Texas Flood, and Mama, Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys. He delivered stunning guitar solos, as did Waylon Payne, as well as Nelson's sons, Lucas Nelson and J. Micah Nelson, known as Particle Kid. By the time that Bob Dylan took the stage, the crowd had already feasted on Neil Young's performance of his beloved song Heart of Gold and Love Earth, which he called a 1960s hootenanny. "What's your favorite planet?" he asked the crowd, until everyone roared back, "Earth!" Reminding the audience of the day's cause, Dave Matthews urged those who joined the food business to pay shareholders to go into a different line of work. He duetted with Tim Reynolds, who drew cheers for nailing a virtuosic upper register solo in Lie in Our Graves. Another surprise guest, Sturgill Simpson, joined Bobby Weir and the Wolf Bros. Weir's Grateful Dead songs like Truckin' drew people out of their seats and into the aisles to dance. Jam Band, the String Cheese Incident, inspired similar behavior during their time on stage. Several Hoosier moments dotted the night. Margot Price's magnetic stage presence lit up the famous tale of Indiana Boys and Indiana Nights in her excellent rendition of Tom Petty's Mary Jane's Last Dance, for which Sturgill Simpson joined her. And John Mellencamp elicited cheers when he subbed a phrase in Small Town with, "I was born at Hoosier, right here in this state," in the midst of his driving, energetic set. Yeah, good day, good night of great music in Indiana. Wonder where next year's Farm Aid will be. Hey, we're out of time already. It's 9:58. Got to wrap it up. Hope you have a great day today. Do something nice for someone. I'll see you back here tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
This is my home. This is where I belong.
Out your later home. closing. It's time for Oktoberfest in La Crosse, September 28th through the 30th. 3 days featuring German food and beer, Stein races, barrel rolling, and the best in live music, polka bands. Celebrate the friendliest fest in the Midwest, Oktoberfest in La Crosse, Thursday through Saturday, September 28th to the 30th at the Oktoberfest grounds. Find more information at OktoberfestUSA.com. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Aaron comes in every day looking like he just stepped out of a Turkish bathhouse because it's so hot in there. Just to recap, so far the segment has been filled with dog vomit, old men peeing, and Aaron wearing a dish towel. So we're...
Hey man, your name's on the show. Your name's on the show.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Emory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Jim.